You're listening to Marketplace Weekend, where the economy meets real life. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. We have talked on this show about President-elect Donald Trump's potential conflicts of interest between his businesses and being president. This week, of course, he had a press conference to lay out his plans. The brief gist, he's handing over control of the Trump Organization to his older sons and a business associate. New foreign deals will not be allowed. New domestic deals will. He's putting his assets into a trust, but Trump can look at an overall profit and loss statement. In addition, Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, will join the administration as a senior advisor. We've got John Michaels on to talk about all this. He is a law professor at UCLA. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
The head of the Office of Government Ethics said this would leave the president-elect open to suspicion of corruption. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a staggering number of issues here. It's almost hard to know where to start. This isn't a blind trust. His children will be running everything. That's not separation. He can influence public policy in ways that affect the business. And even if he's not looking at the sheets, he would know what's good and what's not good for his golf courses, his branding, his real estate holdings. This pertains to how we invest in infrastructure, what we do with our federal labor policy, what do we do with land use, what do we do with the environment. These are all issues which, as someone who is deeply still embedded in business relationships, will think about how that affects the business. And he probably will have a good sense, just as many of us would, what will be good or bad for his holdings. And that's before we get into the kind of international questions, which raise their own set of conflicts as well.
His lawyer made the argument that given the nature of his holdings and the fact that the name itself is sort of the brand, that it would be almost impossible to create a blind trust. Does that hold water to you?
There is an argument that it'd be impossible to completely separate oneself given the very complicated nature and also very well-recognized branding that goes on. If that's the case, the real answer is complete divestment. And I know there's arguments, and many people have said that's unfair, it's unreasonable, he wouldn't get full market value for it. I'd argue he would probably get full market value. But even if you say it's unfair, this man has built up this business for all these years, that might simply just be the cost of pursuing the highest office in the land. There are other forms of sacrifices public servants make every day, from the lowest person on the GS scale to Supreme Court justices who have to cloister themselves more or less from a lot of the conversations of the day.
I want to ask you about the difference between optics and law.
Yeah.
And here I want to play some sound from the president-elect from this news conference this week, where he basically says there is no law that applies. Let's listen to that.
But I don't want to take advantage of something. I have something that others don't have. Vice President Pence also has it. I don't think he'll need it. I have a feeling he's not going to need it. But I have a no conflict of interest provision as president.
Is he right?
We've seen arguments of this in various sorts. We've seen arguments where the president has suggested that he can't be ex parte in a government adjudication because he is.
What does that mean for a mortal like me?
Sorry. There's this old case in which the president was alleged to interfere with an ongoing deliberation about a waiver to the Endangered Species Act. And the president made the argument that I can't be ex parte. I can't be someone with a conflict in this case because I'm the president. And the court shot that down. I think the reasoning is simply that the president is the person who has the most conflicts. The president is someone who is least capable of recusing him or herself from a matter of national consequence. It's easy if you are one of 30 government procurement officers in the Air Force to say, you know what, I have a brother-in-law who works there. Let me work on some other issue. The president can't do that. The president shouldn't do that. And we would have a very weak and challenged executive branch if the president were to say, oh, this involves land use. Oh, this involves labor law. I can't get involved. So we're in a position where we essentially have to let him remain president and hold our breath on a lot of these conflicts.
I want to bring up the word emoluments, which I think a lot of people who are not law professors like you are learning for the first time. This part of the Constitution that says, you know, basically we can't take gifts from basically an elected official, king, leader of the country, et cetera, can't take gifts from foreign powers. Can you explain how it applies here, because Trump's lawyer said it doesn't really apply to him.
Yeah, it's another argument I don't see his way. So this is part of the Constitution, and it essentially says that any person holding an office of profit or trust under the United States, unless Congress grants an explicit waiver, shall not accept presents, offices, titles, or emoluments from any king, prince, or foreign state. Now, what that means is, a title makes enough sense, office makes enough sense, but emolument is a salary, fee, or profit from employment or office.
So that's the catchy
part.
That's
just the definition. And the most important language in that constitutional provision is of any kind, whatever.
So that would include a hotel room, say, at a Trump hotel?
This would, to me, be a fee, salary, or profit from employment or office. So if Trump is in the service industry and someone is patronizing his industry, who's a foreign head of state, well, then we have a problem there.
A lot of this stuff seems archaic and complicated. How does a regular voter make sense of it and kind of understand where it might impact my daily life?
Here's the tricky part. It's really up to the citizens, because it's very hard to envision a scenario in which the courts would have a sharp legal challenge to a lot of the concerns of conflicts of interest. So it actually is even more incumbent on the citizenry to use judgment, use the political process to express discomfort at various opportunities. As a citizen, what are you worried about? The big concern here is public corruption and not being able to have faith in the decisions that the executive branch is making, because there's always this residual uncertainty whether this has a profit motive in the back of the president's mind. Or maybe the president doesn't even have these interests, but everyone around him assumes he does and are making efforts to support him or ingratiate themselves with him or please him by doing things that are, say, pro-Trump organization friendly. So how it trickles down into our lives, one could be concerned about, again, when I was saying before about how is infrastructure policy going to be laid out? How is federal labor law? How is health care? All these things matter to the Trump organization as much as it matters to you or me. So I think it breeds a degree of skepticism and distrust, which is particularly problematic in this case, given that the president-elect has spent a good deal of time discrediting at times even savaging core institutions of trust, whether it be the media, the intelligence community, judges who are of Mexican descent. We have all these instances in which this administration-elect is setting up a situation in which we're not supposed to trust these institutions. But yet at the same time, we're supposed to trust him.
I want to ask about Jared Kushner, the president-elect's son-in-law, who will be moving to Washington to be some sort of senior advisor. What issues of law are at play with a family member within the administration? After all, we have seen that before, certainly in the Kennedy administration.
Yeah, so we have anti-nepotism laws. There is some question about how much that applies to confidential assistance to the president. And again, this would not come up as an issue that the courts would ever be able to entertain, largely because as a confidential advisor, you're not making specific decisions that carry the force of law. So again, we have to think in terms of kind of what is the appearances of impropriety? What does this suggest about the White House and the type of advice the president is getting? I would give to Kushner's credit, he does seem to be divesting himself fully. And that only puts into sharper relief the fact that the president-elect has not followed suit.
You said something really interesting before we came into the studio, which was looking at Jared Kushner's business and Rex Tillerson's business as different models of accountability and how that might translate over into government service. Can you explain that a bit?
Yeah. So there's a gigantic movement, a very powerful movement to run government more like a business. And this is bipartisan. This has been going on for decades. And there are various virtues and vices with a model of that sort. But oftentimes when we think about a more business-like model, we're thinking of corporations, corporate leaders who have a CEO style of management that's a little bit more decisive, a little bit less bureaucratic. That's the theory. But even when we go down that route, we have CEOs who are part of major organizations that have various competing stakeholders that CEOs are answerable to. Rex Tillerson had a board of directors. He had stakeholders. He had the SEC. There were a number of people to whom he was accountable. It's not clear that kind of real estate scions such as Kushner have a similar set of experiences. The real estate industry is not public. You know, these are not publicly traded corporations. The disclosures are murky. We know that we don't even have the president-elect's tax forms. So it does raise questions about kind of a disposition and a mentality for how do you work in an institution that's as answerable and accountable as the office of the executive branch should be.
John Michaels, professor of law at the UCLA School of Law. Thank you so much.
Thank you.